Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
You raise social policy. I'm curious. You know, the president has said that his views on gay marriage, on same-sex marriage, have evolved, but he's opposed to it. You're opposed to it. Have your views evolved?
Look, I just think that the good news is that as more and more Americans come to understand what this is all about is a simple proposition. Who do you love? Who do you love? And will you be loyal to the person you love? And that's what people are finding out is what all marriages at their root are about. Whether they're marriages of lesbians or gay men or heterosexuals.
That's David Gregory speaking with Vice President Joe Biden Sunday on Meet the Press. I was watching the early part of that conversation. I had to go to church and I did not catch that. That's rather interesting. The Vice President, well, he makes a common argument, doesn't he? That when it comes down to it, with all the laws aside and all the definitions aside, it's really just about who you love. Well, how do you respond to that? Joining us to respond to some of the comments made by Vice President Biden on same-sex marriage, on Meet the Press this weekend, and we're going to keep her busy, respond to several other issues in the news, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
The vice president says, look, it's just as simple as who do you love and are you going to remain faithful to the person you love? How do you respond?
Well, I love my sister. I love my mom. I love my cat. I love my best friend. But not only am I not going to marry any of those people or creatures, the state has no interest in whether I marry them or whether I'm faithful to them or whether I'm friends with them. This is a government takeover of the whole realm of friendship. That's what they're really after. It's not as simple at all as slow Joe Biden would have us believe.
So what you're saying here is essentially the state doesn't and should not have any interest in love per se, but it does have an interest in the institution of marriage.
Well, look, does anybody seriously want love to be a legal category? Does anybody want the government to say, you love this person, and therefore we're interested in the fact that you love this person, and we're going to keep track of and record the fact that you love this person? That's completely ridiculous, number one. And number two, it's an expansion of the state's power. And number three, the state has no actual interest in our friendships and who we love. The only reason the state has ever gotten involved in the thing we're calling marriage is because the interests of helpless children are sometimes and really quite often involved in the institution of marriage and the sexual activity of men and women. That's the only reason the state has any interest whatsoever in anybody's sexual activity.
So let's hear some more from the vice president. Here's Vice President Joe Biden. He says that same-sex marriage is really a civil rights issue.
I am absolutely comfortable with the fact that men marrying men, women marrying women, and heterosexual men and women marrying men are entitled to the same exact rights, all the civil liberties. And quite frankly, I don't see much of a distinction beyond that.
How do you respond to that, Jen?
Well, if poor Joe doesn't see the distinction between a man and a woman and two men and two women, he really needs to go back to basic biology class. And, you know, this is, I have to tell you, Todd, I respect the office of vice president, but I don't necessarily respect the current occupant of the vice presidency. This was a very unintelligent thing for him to be saying.
Now, I would point out that if you concede his first point, that is, marriage is about nothing but my personal affections for whomever, whatever, then wouldn't you have to concede his second point, that they're really, who sees a distinction in who or what you love?
Well, The reason you can't really accept them, and first of all, of course, I don't accept the first point. But secondly, even if you did accept the first point, that it's just about who you love, then what that means is that you have to provide for children and the definition of parenthood somehow separately from marriage. Okay, and this is the thing that all of these people want to gloss over. All these people want to ignore the fact that children are born from heterosexual sexual unions. That's a fact. And for a same-sex couple to have children, they can't do it without the assistance and cooperation of some third party. As soon as you do that, as soon as you say that, you have to see immediately that redefining marriage also redefines parenthood and parental rights. And, you know, you and I have talked about that on this show many times, talking about different particular cases where we see that that's true. So if slow Joe Biden cannot figure out that there's a difference between two men, two women, and a man and a woman when it comes to the procreation of children, he needs to go back to biology class.
You've raised something there, Jennifer, that I find kind of sad but intriguing at the same time. And that is in pointing out that same-sex couples cannot have children apart from the involvement of a third person. So doing the math, two men cannot have children apart from the involvement, if only as an egg donor, a woman.
Right.
And two women cannot have children apart from the involvement, if only as a sperm donor, a man. Haven't we really said, if that's to be accepted, and I agree with you, it isn't, but if it is to be accepted, haven't we really said that we're not talking about parenting in any conventional sense? We're talking about kind of a tripartite parenting at best?
Well, we might be talking about a three-part parenting. We might be talking about one parent plus a step-parent plus a completely absent parent. You know, we're talking about the whole redefining of the configuration of parenthood, and that's what's so objectionable about it. And see, here's the rub. If you really say you can't see any difference between two men and an egg donor and a mom and a dad, if you say you can't see any difference in that configuration, between those two configurations, what you're saying is that you object to the basic biological realities of the human condition. And so for Joe Biden and others to be saying that this is a civil rights issue, Todd, what they're really saying is that they think it's somehow unfair that they can't have children the same way everybody else does. So if you really accept their claim that this is a civil rights issue and that it's unfair that the two of them can't have a baby, what you have to be saying is that you are at war against nature itself. It's nature itself that they think is unfair. And honestly, I don't think any sane person wants to see the state go to war against nature. And that's really what we're talking about, to make men, two men equal to a man and a woman, equal to two women. You have to be at war against Mother Nature herself. And in the end, Mother Nature will win. But we will put ourselves through a lot of misery trying to bend nature to our own whims here.
Sunday on Meet the Press, Vice President Biden also stated that American attitudes are changing on this issue.
My measure, David, and I take a look at when things really begin to change, is when the social culture changes. I think Will and Grace probably did more to educate the American public than almost anything anybody's ever done so far. And I think that people fear that which is different. Now they're beginning to understand. They're beginning to understand that this as a base. I was speaking to a group of gay leaders in Los Angeles two weeks ago. And one gentleman looked at me in the question period and said, "Let me ask you, how do you feel about us?" And I had just walked into the back door of this gay couple, and there were their two adopted children. And I turned to the man who owned the house. I said, "What did I do when I walked in?" He said, "You walked right to my children. They were 7 and 5, giving you flowers." And I said, "I wish every American could see the look of love those kids had in their eyes for you guys. And they wouldn't have any doubt about what this is about."
Well, doesn't sound like Vice President Biden is really against gay marriage, even though David Gregory prefaced his series of questions by saying that that's still his official position.
What was he doing addressing a group of gay leaders in Los Angeles? My guess would be that he was raising money from them. Okay, let's just put that on the table. There's a lot of gay money flowing into politics, both on the Democratic side and the Republican side. So, you know, let's just be honest about that. That's part of what's going on. But let's talk for a minute about Will and Grace, because that really jumped out at me when I read this interview in the first case, that I think Joe Biden is correct to say that Will and Grace changed people's attitudes. But let's think about that for a minute. What we have is Hollywood depicting same-sex couples and depicting them in the most favorable possible light, to the extent that now people not only view gays favorably, but they have an exaggerated idea of how many gay people there are, actually. We did an interview about this some time ago when this survey came out, Todd. I don't know if you remember this interview that we talked about. Gallup poll, surveyed people and asked them, what percentage of the population do you think is gay? And no one came anywhere near to the true position, which is it's about 2% of the population is gay. Most people think it's something like 30 or 40% of the population is gay. Every other person they meet, they think is gay. And the younger you get and the less educated you get, the more people believe that a high percentage of people is gay. Now, why do they think that? Because they're watching TV where one program after another has an appealing gay character in the lineup. Okay, and so Hollywood is depicting gays in a particular way. They're doing that. Every one of those images is put in front of you by somebody for their own reasons and for their own purposes. And so for the gay lobby then to turn around and say that gay marriage is inevitable, it's the inevitable march of history, get out of the way of history, that is so unfair, because the fact is they are manipulating history. They're not just letting history take its course. They're doing everything they can to present themselves and their cause in the most favorable light. And when people disagree with them, they pretend like those people don't exist. You know, so the idea that there's some kind of inevitable march towards gay marriage, I don't buy it. It's a very deliberate, calculated, particular strategy designed to create certain impressions and to recreate reality in the image that they want.
With only about 30 seconds, what's your reaction to the Gallup poll that says that Americans are pretty evenly split on same-sex marriage? We've got about 30 seconds before our break, and we'll pick it up on the other side.
You know, I looked at that poll, and it wasn't a fine enough poll for me to get all excited about it one way or another. If you looked at the little blips in it, it changed as much as 6 months ago. It was saying something quite different, so I don't put too much stock in that.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is our guest in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Our conversation with her continues. We'll talk about Dan Savage, who's big on anti-bullying, doing a little bullying of his own. We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
If your travels bring you to Northwest Indiana, the Saints of Heritage Lutheran Church in Valparaiso invite you to join us for a Christ-centered, cross-focused divine service at 9 a.m. on Sunday morning. For more information about visiting Heritage, please contact Pastor Joseph Ostafinski by calling 219-464-2810 or sending an email to heritagelc@frontier.com. You can also visit us on the web at www.heritage-lcms.org.
What can lay people do to help support pastors and other professional church workers? The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for May is Holding Up the Prophet's Hand, Supporting Church Workers. You can purchase this new resource by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Holding Up the Prophet's Hand costs $12.99 plus shipping and handling, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about Holding Up the Prophet's Hand at issuesetc.org.
It's funny, as someone who's on the receiving end of beatings that are justified by the Bible, how pansy-ass some people react when you push back. So I apologize if I hurt anyone's feelings, but I have a right to defend myself and to point out the hypocrisy of people who justify anti-gay bigotry by pointing to the Bible and insisting we must live by the code of Leviticus on this one issue and no other.
Dan Savage giving what was supposed to be an anti-bullying speech recently to a group of high school journalism students. He's animated. He's trying to make a point, and he says he has a right to defend himself against people who use the Bible to justify bullying. Now, I haven't been paying as close attention to that issue as I probably should have been, but I've followed the stories, and I have yet to hear anyone use the Bible as a justification for anti-gay bullying. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're continuing our conversation with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute, turning to the issue of Dan Savage's anti-bullying speech to the high school journalism students. Jennifer, what's your reaction when he says, look, I'm just defending myself when I essentially attack what the Bible teaches on homosexuality, because the Bible's used to justify anti-gay bullying?
Well, you know, I think that was a completely disingenuous statement there. He's there as an authority figure in front of a bunch of high school students, blasting them with his anti-Christian and anti-Jewish rhetoric there. And so, you know, that's a far more aggressive thing to say than I've ever heard anybody say in a mixed audience like that, in a Christian context. I don't think I've ever heard anybody do or say anything like what he did or what he's accusing people of doing. And I think what's really interesting about Dan Savage is that he identifies himself so closely with his sexual behavior that anybody saying, I don't approve of this particular kind of sexual behavior, is attacking him or bullying him, you know, and is obviously suspect. And, you know, I think most people are capable of making a distinction between disapproval of particular behavior and an attack on an individual. You know, so I think that was, kind of a smokescreen that he was throwing up there to obscure the issue rather than to bring any clarity. And why did he need to do such a thing anyway? Why did he need to do that in order to make whatever valid point he might have had to make? That's what bothers me about it.
Have you found anyone who justifies violence against gay people based upon the Bible?
Personally, I'm not acquainted with anybody who justifies violence against gay people for any reason, for the Bible, you know, for biblical reasons or anything else. I don't know. I'm not acquainted with anybody who does that. And I know a lot of people who don't agree with redefining marriage, and I know a lot of people who don't approve of homosexual practice. But I don't know anybody who justifies violence against gay people for any reason. So, it's a big country. There are 300 million people in the United States. There's probably somebody out there that does, but I don't know them. You know, and I you'd think I would have stumbled over a few of them, but I don't.
Does everyone who opposes something like redefining marriage to include same-sex couples, do they do it based upon the Bible or religious considerations?
Well, I think, you know, it depends on how you define religious, because if you think of religion as being, you know, something that defines the ultimate meaning of life and something that gives answers to the ultimate questions, then I think, you know, in that sense, everything's a religious question. Everything's a religious motive. You know, so for Dan Savage to say, I'm entitled to do whatever I want sexually, implicitly, that's a theological statement. He doesn't admit it, but he's got a whole lot of metaphysical presuppositions built into a statement like that, and moral claims built into a statement like that. So, you know, in a certain way, any substantive moral claim is something like religion, you know. So I think that, you know, once again, I think that's kind of the wrong question. The real question is, are there proper limits on people's sexual conduct? Are there proper limits on what counts as a marriage? Does marriage actually mean something, or does marriage mean whatever we want it to mean? Those are the questions that need to be answered, and I think those questions can be answered without reading the Bible particularly. But certainly reading the Bible adds something to it. So, you know, I think, you know, once again, that's a question that's designed to marginalize people of faith from participating even in the conversation. And that's, of course, a kind of bullying.
They just feel like they're doing what's right. They're doing their job. But in fact, they knew when they were writing this decision that it was going to be a pioneering decision, a landmark decision, and would face a lot of popular opposition.
The voice of Caroline Kennedy talking about a Profiling Courage Award that was given to three Iowa justices who were ousted after deciding to legalize same-sex marriage in that state. What did you make of Caroline Kennedy taking this kind of Kennedy-esque award to these three ousted Iowa judges, Jennifer?
Well, of course, the timing is obviously deliberate, right? Because today, this very day, the people of North Carolina are voting on a marriage amendment. And so it just so happens that Caroline Kennedy, right around the same time, is making her great statement, you know, in support of the judges who all by themselves redefine marriage in the state of Iowa. What Caroline Kennedy doesn't mention there is she doesn't mention the fact that those Iowa judges refused to hear the testimony of most of the expert witnesses that people brought forward to defend the traditional definition of marriage. That was not particularly a profile and courage for them to refuse to hear the testimony of those people. If they were really courageous, they would have listened to what those people had to say before they decided that they already knew what marriage was and its place in society. I think those people knew going into that decision, they knew exactly what they were going to do, and I don't think it took any courage for them at all. What I think is true is that they were surprised that the people of Iowa spoke out against them. They were surprised. They thought they were going to get away with it. They thought this was safe for them because they're used to the idea that judges get to do what they want to reconstruct society. And, you know, the people of Iowa had something different to say about it.
Talk about the courage that it takes to actually, in this culture and in this kind of legal barrage that we see in the courts towards same-sex marriage, to try and oppose it.
Well, you know, the fact is that, you know, David Blankenhorn, I wouldn't say he's a great friend of mine, but he's kind of a friend of mine. I admire him, and you know, we talk with one another and so on. I mean, but he was one of two expert witnesses in the Prop 8 trial. The other expert witnesses had been either disallowed or were afraid to testify for fear of being, you know, harassed. David Blankenhorn's children came home from school attacking him because of things that they had heard their, you know, their teachers and friends say at school. I mean, you know, it has been turned into an issue where the answer is assumed to be correct. And this is very typical of the left, Todd. This is a very typical Leninist, leftist-type strategy. Every important question that should be a debatable question is turned into an assumption. And if you don't follow along with the assumption, then you are politically incorrect and verboten and you know, kicked out of polite society. And, you know, the term political correctness actually comes from Lenin. And that's what he meant by it. It was not, you know, some kind of ironic term, you know. So I think that turning important and debatable questions into assumptions is not an act of courage at all. If you had the courage of your convictions, you would stand and have an honest, complete conversation about the subject rather than throwing emotional smoke bombs out, trying to change the subject, trying to get everybody's emotions stirred up, and looking carefully at what the issues really are at stake.
Whatever your personal, moral, or religious views may be, writing discrimination into North Carolina's Constitution is just plain wrong.
That's North Carolina Governor Bev Perdue. She was stating in a video that she doesn't support a marriage amendment being voted on today by North Carolina residents. What is your take on the attempt state to state and here in North Carolina to, well, she says it's writing discrimination into the Constitution. What do you say?
Oh, Todd, didn't you hear me shrieking when she said that? I mean, that what her quotation was an exact example of what I was just describing. She took the important question, what is marriage? What does it mean to be married? And does gender have a role in marriage? That is an important question, and she turned it into an assumption. So she assumes that it's a discrimination, that there's no other possible reason, and that there's nothing but a civil rights issue at stake here. And if you really believe that, then what you really mean is that the fact that only men and women can have children together biologically, that you think that is discrimination. And I think that's what some of these people believe, that what they want to do is break down the parent-non-parent dichotomy and remove the idea of natural parenthood and replace it with the concept of legal parenthood, where instead of parenthood being something that is a biological given that the state just records, they want parenthood to be a complete creation of the state. This is not a small move at all. This is a very serious, aggressive attempt to remake the core of the social order. And so for her, for the governor of North Carolina, to be accusing the people of her own state of being of enacting discrimination into the Constitution, she has no business talking to her own people like that. And I hope that they throw her out at the next possible opportunity. I probably shouldn't say that. I'm not supposed to electioneer. I'm not supposed to campaign. But, you know, honestly, that's an insult to her people. And I don't even know what party she is. That is completely improper for an elected official to talk about the people who elected her to office in that way. That's completely improper.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Moshe is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find more about the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. business card and the Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
Treadmill for the mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muscoda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muscoda, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.